I'd like to invite to the stage our next speaker, Dr. Jay Lee. He's the chief of the Division of Thoracic Surgery and surgical director of the Thoracic Oncology Program and surgical director of the Center for Esophageal Disorders, associate professor of surgery at the David Geffen School of Medicine at UCLA. Dr. Lee received his medical degree from UCLA and training in general surgery at Georgetown and Duke University Medical Centers. He completed a thoracic research fellowship at MSKCC and received cardiothoracic surgery training at the Brigham and Women's and Children's Hospital at Harvard Medical School. He has published extensively in the field of thoracic oncology and has an NIH-funded research laboratory. He is the principal investigator of several FDA-approved clinical trials focused on gene-modified cellular immunotherapy in human lung cancer and modulation of the immunosuppressive tumor microenvironment. Dr. Lee will be speaking on how genomics are relevant to the practicing lung cancer surgeon.
Thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to present today. These are my disclosures. I have relationships with Genentech and Merck. I'm also on the LCMC Executive Committee. The topic for today can be broken down into three areas that I'd like to focus on. One is the identification of molecular targets for therapy. Secondly, predictors of response to immunotherapy. And finally, circulating peripheral blood tumor biomarkers, or what's referred to as liquid biopsies. So in terms of the first topic, this has been discussed already, the difference between driver and passenger mutations is becoming increasingly prevalent in the literature about the different categories that these mutations confer, but driver mutations, for the most part, confer a selective cell growth advantage, and these are characterized by the 12 different pathways in the inner circle here. And all of those pathways relate to three major categories of either cell survival, cell fate, and genome maintenance out in the outer circle here. The passenger mutations are pre-neoplastic mutations that largely have no effect on the neoplastic process, but may have importance for monitoring response to various therapies that we'll talk about later. The number of somatic mutations that are representative in human cancers is quite variable, and you can see the various different cancers on the y-axis and the mutation load on the y-axis here. Lung cancer is one of the most mutagenic tumors, mainly related to smoking, but you can see that colorectal cancer, lung cancer, and melanoma all seem to have fairly high mutation loads, and lung cancer is about 200. So this is an example of how the driver mutations have been used to guide treatment in lung cancer. This is the LCMC2 trial, 14 sites for metastatic lung cancer patients. Multiplex assays testing for the 10 driver mutations were evaluated, mainly to determine the frequency of these oncogenic drivers, and then ultimately to match that with treatments that target those specific driver mutations. And a total of approximately 1,000 patients were enrolled in this study. The red box here on the left side denotes the major driver mutations that were identified, and the frequencies are in the middle box, 25% for KRAS, sensitizing EGFR mutations representing 17%, and down the list here. Of this group, basically what they found was that an actionable driver mutation was detected in about 60% of the tumors in patients with lung adenocarcinomas, and in the entire group of some thousand patients, about 30% were actually used to guide and to be directed towards targeted therapy. The outcome data looks like this, where you can break down the median survivals into three different groups. One is the presence of an oncogenic driver mutation, but the patient did not get any treatment, and that's denoted in the dark blue line here, with a median survival of 2.4 months. The no oncogenic driver group is in the royal blue curve here, and that group has a median survival of 2. So if you have a driver mutation, even if you don't get the targeted therapy, you do have a better prognosis. However, the best group that will have the best overall survival is going to be the targeted therapy group. When you have the driver mutation and you get the targeted therapy, they had a median survival of 3.5 months. So this trial and many other trials ultimately led to FDA approval of targeted agents. These are all the current targeted agents that are FDA approved for late-stage metastatic disease patients that target EGFR, ALK, ROS1, and BRAF, and the various genomic strategies that were described, including FISH and NGS and single gene mutation. All of those things are applied to identify these driver mutations. However, at the current time, there are no FDA approved targeted therapies in early-stage lung cancer in resectable lung cancer patients. So there are studies currently being conducted and being proposed. This is one of the study proposals. I borrowed this slide from Mark Chris from Memorial, and this is the LCMC4 neoadjuvant proposal. We talked about these basket trials or umbrella trials. This is a screening of 1,000 patients that we anticipate enrolling, screening, and then ultimately enrolling from that group, stages 1 through 3 lung cancer patients who are operable, and they will all undergo multiplex genotyping and then identification of a driver mutation. Those with currently approved drugs and those drugs that are currently in the pipelines that are drug industry sponsored, the patient will be matched to the targeted therapy and ultimately undergo surgery with various biologic correlatives as well as major pathologic responses endpoints. And you can see down here the circulating free DNA is also one of the endpoints that we're looking at, and we'll talk about that later. But so the point is that the targeted agents are shifting from late stage patients to the earlier stage resectable lung cancer patients is what's happening in the field now. So immunotherapy is the next hot topic in lung cancer. When we look at predictors of a response to immunotherapy, it's important to understand what checkpoint inhibition means. At a very basic level, you have an antigen-presenting cell, and then you have a T cell. And the antigen-presenting cell has to interact through various signals in order to activate this T cell. One requires the MHC complex with the T cell receptor, various co-stimulatory molecules, the CD86 is depicted here. And then the PD-1, PD-L1 axis, also known as B7. And this interaction is how you maintain and prevent dysregulated inflammation and autoimmunity. But ultimately, if you inhibit this axis of PD-1 or PD-L1, you lead to T cell activation. So all of the therapies have been directed at these two targets. This is the KEYNOTE-1 study. This is a metastatic lung cancer, non-small cell lung cancer trial, 500 patients enrolled, and pembrolizumab, which is a PD-1 inhibitor, was given to these patients, and it was largely based on a protein biomarker called PD-L1, and you can see the staining profile where when you have more than 50% positive staining, it's very brown, and then you can see the mid-group, 1 to 49%, which has some brown staining, and scant or no staining in the less than 1%. So when you look at the clinical data of overall response rates, the red bars denotes the positive staining group that's greater than 50%. If you had at least 50% staining for PD-L1, the response rate was nearly 50%. However, even in the lower expressing groups, there was still overall response rates to pembrolizumab. When you look at the overall survival curves, and this was the basis for why 50% cutoff was used for pembrolizumab in lung cancer, is that the overall survival curve was most beneficial in the group that was greater than 50% staining. But I don't think that eliminates the fact that you still have response rates in these lower staining groups. So what it leads to is the fact that you need better markers. You need more markers. PD-L1 is not perfect. This was a study published in Science by Dr. Rizvi from Columbia, and these were stage 4 lung cancer patients, and the patients came from Memorial and UCLA, and whole exome sequencing was used mainly to look at tumor mutational burden and match that to clinical data. And the numbers are small. There were 14 and 17. DCB is durable clinical response. Within 6 months, these patients had stable or favorable response rates, and non-durable responses was a group that had progressive disease within the six-month period. So you had, in this group, you can see that there's higher non-synonymous mutation load per tumor in the patients that responded to the pembrolizumab. Non-synonymous mutations, tumor mutations, are ones that lead to aberrations and changes to the protein itself. when you look at the clinical data here, PFS was much higher in the high tumor mutational burden group. So this was associated with favorable clinical efficacy to pembrolizumab, the PD-1 inhibitor. This was a small study. It was published in Science because it was the first time that was described. I think the results were essentially validated in CheckMate 26, which is the late stage trial of 400-some patients with PD-L1 expression that was entry required greater than 1%, but all the ones that were analyzed at greater than 5%. And what we saw in this data set is that ultimately the median survival in the PFS between the nivolumab, which is a PD-1 inhibitor, or the chemotherapy alone group, there was no difference. So this was felt to be a negative trial. But when you break it down by the tumor mutational burden, and the low, medium, and higher are shown here by the cutoffs in the tumor mutations, you can see that in the high tumor mutation burden group, when you look at that subset of patients, the nivo group did substantially better than the chemotherapy arm itself. When you look at the lower medium tumor mutation burden group, the curves flip, and the chemotherapy arm did far better than the nivo group. So although the overall data was no difference in OS or PFS, in the high tumor mutation burden group, the response rates, the PFS, and the hazard ratios are all favorable to the nivo group in the high tumor mutation burden group. And again, this is how, you know, whole exome sequencing is utilized to find a subset, to identify a group that's going to respond and serve as a better biomarker for immunotherapy. So what relevance does this have to the surgeon? Well, the fact is that four checkpoint inhibitors have currently been FDA approved in late stage patients, but that is all shifting to the earlier stage resectable lung cancer patients. This is a slide that I made in March of this year. I can tell you it's already outdated because there's more trials I need to add on to here, but this is the neoadjuvant immunotherapy trials alone in the early stages, you know, 1 through 3 lung cancer patients, and the largest one being the LCMC3 trial, where we have a target enrollment of 180. We've currently enrolled over 100 patients currently, and currently continue to enroll. And this is a brief schema of it. And the point being that we're giving atezolizumab, a PD-1 inhibitor, prior to surgery, and then they have the option to continue on it a year thereafter. This data was presented at ASCO, as well as at the recent IASLC meeting, and we'll present an updated set of results at World Lung that's upcoming. So immunotherapy is a very hot topic, and it appears that it's going to be shifting to the earlier stage patients is the point of that. The final topic I want to talk about is circulating tumor biomarkers, or what's referred to as liquid biopsies. And this is a paper from Stanford, from Max Dean's group. And what they looked at was that molecular residual disease, defined as if you find circulating tumor DNA after localized lung cancer treatment, whether that was surgery or SBRT or chemotherapy in the unresectable patient groups, that could this be used to guide adjuvant therapy? So they looked at blood and tissue samples from localized lung cancer patients as well as from healthy adults. Majority of patients were non-small cell lung cancer patients. And plasma was drawn before treatment and after treatment and followed in parallel with CT scans or PET CT scans before and after surgery. And what their Stanford group found was that in patients with no circulating tumor DNA in the blood system after surgery, within 4 months of after surgery treatment, compared to those that had circulating free DNA in the systemic circulation within that 4 month period, that there was a significant difference between progression and disease free survival. And you can see the red curve where when you have circulating free DNA, their prognosis is significantly less. And this had a lead time advantage in terms of diagnosis, that the detection of ctDNA preceded clinical evidence of the CT scan by at least 5 months in 72% of patients. So So this was an example of where ctDNA analysis could identify a post-treatment, a molecular residual disease population with localized lung cancer, where it was better than standard care radiographic imaging, and could identify a population of who should get adjuvant therapy. And to push it even more, could it be used as a response to treatment, whether it's immunotherapy or targeted therapies? So in summary, genomics has had a widespread application to cancer therapy, and in lung cancer, it has really been revolutionized by the advent of targeted therapy and immunotherapy. And now that these treatments have been approved in late stage, we're seeing a shift to early stage resectable lung cancer. Thank you.